This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
Happy Monday, everybody. What is going on? It's your boy, Jason McIntyre. Straight Fire for Monday, March 29th. I hope everybody had a spectacular weekend. I had an enjoyable weekend. I did a lot of fun stuff. We celebrated my son's birthday on the beach. Really a beautiful beach day in LA. I had to watch the Sweet 16, the first game and a half on my phone. Did not love that. And by the way, quick word to the wise. Regression in the Sweet 16 hit me hard. My gosh, it hurt. I had a great first two rounds. Sweet 16, not kind to me. However, there is good news. I will give out a best bet on tonight's Elite Eight games at the end of the podcast. A quick word before we get to a couple big things that happened in the NBA. And of course, it was an NFL monster, couple trades on Friday. I just need to quickly say this first. So you guys know I mentioned I got the vaccine last week. I'm very excited. By the way, thank you to all the new listeners to the pod. Last week, we had some pretty significant numbers. Thank you to the new audience. Welcome aboard and hope you guys stick around. I'll say this. After you get the vaccine, you feel like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. And, you know, my brother came in town with his wife. They got vaccinated and we went to a comedy show Friday night. I know we had a couple comedians on the podcast. Who doesn't love comedy? And they had a venue that was outdoors out in Hollywood. It was like sandwiched between two buildings, but I thought it was cool. Every comic like made fun of the setup because that's what they do. The two people, now Rob G, I don't know how much comedy you've seen live. I've just got to give Bill Burr is friggin' tremendous. I guess he's going through like some cancel culture stuff. People are going after him and he was just in rare form. Maybe it was perfect form for Bill Burr. I don't know. I don't listen to his podcast. I've heard him. I think Cowherd had him on once, and I may have heard him on a Joe Rogan podcast once, but I'm not that familiar with him. And Bill Burr was incredible. This dude is hilarious. He did some stuff that obviously not really politically correct, but I want to hear that stuff from my comedians. And the other person who I thought absolutely slayed was Eliza Schlesinger. I guess she's like in her 30s, you know, funny as hell. And she had some really good stuff. There was a couple other big names that I thought didn't really deliver. No disrespect. I'm a big fan of David Spade. Didn't think David Spade really brought it. And final word on comedy, this comedian named Jeff Ross, who is the king of roasts. You see him on these comedy specials, Comedy Central. He kills everyone. And it's the funniest stuff. They go viral. Jeff Ross stood up and did a couple minutes of comedy. I was like, he's way better at roasts. Maybe he had an off night, whatever. But it was a great night out. I hope everybody out there, once you guys get vaccinated, you feel like I'm ready to go out. I'll tell you this. I was talking to a buddy, season tickets on the Lakers. People who are going, who went to Laker games pre-pandemic are all like, yo, I'm vaccinated. I need to get to a game. Like everybody's excited to get back to games. And frankly, right now, let's start with the Lakers real quick before we get to other stuff. Andre Drummond is now a Los Angeles Laker. And I don't know how else to say this other than you could give Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge to the Nets. Andre Drummond is a bigger move than both those guys. Chiefly because Drummond is actually going to play basketball. Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm not sure how big of factors they're going to be. They have some other players out there in Brooklyn on the front line who I think are more valuable than those two, but we'll get to them in a minute. The Andre Drummond move is just enormous. First of all, he's going to start from the jump. Marc Gasol got a Defensive Player of the Year award in the past. Real plus minus this season, among all centers, he ranks 45th of 83. He's not really moving well at this advanced age. Really good passer, high IQ guy. Marc Gasol has not been very good for the Lakers this year. Enter Andre Drummond. And I know what you're going to say. Oh, he couldn't defend a chair. Come on, get out of here. Andre Drummond stinks. Andre Drummond, by the way, playing on an awful Cleveland team. 41st among centers in defensive real plus minus. So he hasn't been historically bad the way he usually is. I mean, Drummond really is not known for defense. However, currently, Dwight Howard is 63rd, JaVale McGee 64th. I got to say, I've been impressed with Andre Drummond this year. Now, if you think back to the bubble, we know Anthony Davis don't like to play the five. He just doesn't. He doesn't like to bang. He's a finesse guy. If you watched Evan Mobley of USC during this incredible Trojans run through the postseason, Evan Mobley has some Anthony Davis going on. Like, he's inside and he's rebounding. He don't want to bang inside. He's a thin guy. He can step out. He's a great passer. I like all that stuff from Anthony Davis. However, in the West, there are going to be instances where he's going to have to bang, or we're going to have to put Drummond on the floor. And I think against DeAndre Ayton, I think in moments against Rudy Gobert, and certainly Jokic. And listen, Drummond's not going to shut these guys down, but you need that big body. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to go big. I think Drummond is a great get for the Lakers. Let me just remind folks, on an awful Cleveland team, this guy was putting up 17 and 15 a night. He basically goes out there, gets every rebound, dunks everything, and he's shooting, what is he, 60%? No, I'm sorry, he's not 60. Holy cow, he's down to 47% from the field this year. Okay, that's bad. Andre Drummond needs to take better shots. Earlier in his career in Detroit, 60, 53, 52, 53, 55, better shooter. He's not getting easy shots when you're on a bad Cleveland team. Guess who's going to get a lot better looks, and his field goal percentage is going to go through the roof playing with LeBron James and Anthony Davis? That would be Andre Drummond. So, Rob G, listen, I know you're obviously a massive Lakers fan. You're very excited for the move. I'm curious as to your thoughts on Andre Drummond to the Lakers.
I think it'll be a good fit. I mean, it gives them something that they don't have, which is a big guy who can, you know, kind of play above the rim a little bit, which is what they do not have at all in Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell. It's interesting that with the Drummond move, though, we're going to get to LaMarcus Aldridge here in a minute, but I actually think that if the Lakers had signed Aldridge and the Nets have signed Drummond, that would have been better for each team. So
hold on. Andre Drummond would have been better on the Nets if the Lakers got LaMarcus Aldridge?
No, I think that each team would have been better with the other guy's buyout person that they got. And that's just because, you know, with Andre Drummond, he's fine. He gives them something that they don't have, but when it's crunch time and it's in the playoffs and you're in the last 5 minutes of a tight game, he's not going to be on the court. And he's a guy, especially right now with the injuries that the Lakers have, they don't necessarily need a big body down low. They need a guy who can score because they have problems scoring. If you saw last night and even on Friday night against the Cavs, I mean, had Colin Sexton been available or had the Orlando Magic not traded away their four best players, you know, the Lakers probably lose both of those games because they just can't score right now without AD and LeBron. So
yes, you're under 1.5 wins.
Yeah, I got screwed by the trade deadline. But
that's good for the Lakers. They needed those two wins badly.
Yeah,
to stop the bleeding.
I'll happily pay the $20 I owe Chris Broussard now.
Yeah, I got to say though, I'm not 100% certain that 35-year-old LaMarcus Aldridge would be on the floor final 5 minutes of the Lakers. Is he an upgrade? Can he defend on the wing against, a Kawhi Paul George pick and roll better than, say, the Morris twin? I don't know about that. I mean, Kuzma has had his moments. I know he's been a big knock defensively, but he had his moments in the bubble where he was trying really, really hard. LaMarcus Aldridge is 35. I'm not, you know, I can see, I would guess fully healthy Lakers closing lineup is what? Schroeder, KCP, LeBron, AD, and then whoever's got the hot hand out of Kuzma or Morris, perhaps even an Alex Caruso gets a look. I don't know if Horton Tucker's there yet, but I don't see how Aldridge cracks that five some.
Well, neither one, Drummond or Aldridge, would crack the final five, I think, for either team that they go to. That's not the situation. The situation is the Lakers just need to tread water for the next couple of weeks while AD and LeBron are out, and they could have used LaMarcus Aldridge pick and pop skills a lot more than they could use a rebounding rim running center, because right now they don't have anyone who can create for that rim running center. That was the issue that he had in Cleveland. You know, say what you want about the Sexton backcourt, they're not known for their distribution skills. You know, like that's not something that works out. And Dennis Schroeder is not a point guard in that sense of the position. You know, he's more of a scoring guard. Kyle Kuzma never turned down a shot that was half open. You know, Alex Caruso doing anything other than screening offensively is a mission, you know? And so yeah. They what they needed was scoring temporarily. So that's why I think Aldridge would have been better fit for the Lakers.
Than Let me wrap up the Lakers portion of this with this. So they get a couple days off before they face the Bucks on Wednesday. I didn't hear anything. I don't know if you did, Rob, about Anthony Davis and what his status is, but I'm assuming he ain't coming back this week. But they get the Bucks Wednesday, and then the longest road game of road stretch of the season. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight road games. And it's Sacramento, then the Paperclips, then they fly down to Florida for the Toronto Raptors, and then they stay in Florida for the Heat, then up north to Brooklyn, New York, then back down to Charlotte. And then when they come home, you're like, oh, they're finally home. Okay, they'll probably have LeBron back by then. Well, they sure as hell better, because when they get home, it's Celtics, Jazz. Okay? This stretch will determine whether or not the Lakers end up playing in that play-in tournament to get into the playoffs. Because, play-in game. Rob, I got to be honest. I would not be shocked if they go 1-6 on this road trip. And then have to come home. We'll see if LeBron's back by then. Boston, Utah, that ain't easy. So that's where we are with the Lakers. Andre Drummond, obviously, a nice help. Now let me quickly pour some cold water on the Nets fans who are all geeked about adding Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge. So Blake Griffin, hey, we know his history. Once a legend. He's played 3 games with the Nets. 15 minutes, 19 minutes, 20 minutes. My question, how the hell is Blake Griffin going to play any minutes when Kevin Durant is back and they have LaMarcus Aldridge in the fold? I don't see it. Now let's get to LaMarcus Aldridge, who, oh my gosh, it was funny. I forget what day this popped. It might have been Saturday or, listen, it was a long weekend for us, okay? As soon as the news popped, it was like, oh, look at all these former All-Stars. They've got 41 All-Star or whatever the number is. Like, folks, LaMarcus Aldridge is 35 years old. 35. He's jacking threes this year because, hey, you're old. You want to stick around in the league? I mean, that's what you do. And it's not like he's hitting them at a great clip, 36% with the Spurs this year. I don't really know what LaMarcus Aldridge can bring the Nets, because when I look at that team, you know, we know Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are not letting DeAndre Jordan go to the bench. He's going to be their starting center because he's their friend and they got him there, okay? We know Joe Harris is starting. And I guess the other starter, that would be Joe Harris is the fifth starter. So then the question is, well, who's the first guy off the bench? And I think there is a little Lakers thing going on here where it's like, well, some games for the Lakers, it's a Morris, the other a Caruso, maybe a Wes Matthews, maybe Montrezl Harrell. Like you just don't, it's like a feel thing. And I think Nash, coach of the Nets, is going to go through the same thing. Well, you know, maybe we could really use Bruce Brown here. You know, maybe that's the guy we need to inject out there. Or maybe we need another shooter. We'll go small. Let's get Landry Shamet out there. Or we're getting slaughtered inside. Let's go to Aldridge maybe at center. Or I don't see if it's being Blake Griffin. And frankly, I think Jeff Green is more valuable right now than Aldridge and Blake Griffin. And then they got this young kid, Nicholas Claxton, who's 21. And it's like, well, he's going to be more, he's the perfect rim runner for James Harden. That ain't Blake Griffin anymore, although he has 2 dunks this year. Whoop-de-damn-doo. I mean, Claxton, we know what he's given you. Defense inside, some rim protection, and dunks. And he's not going to do anything else or try to do anything else. Jeff Green is playoff battle-tested. I can't remember the last big playoff series LaMarcus Aldridge was a part of, but maybe Rob G can tell me. I mean, he was with Portland with Damian Lillard. They won a little bit, and then he got to the Spurs, and they lost in the first round to I think it was the Nuggets, and Blake Griffin. All he does is get hurt in the playoffs. So, you know, I know Andre Drummond for the Lakers, he doesn't have any playoff experience outside of a couple first-round washouts with Detroit. But overall, like, people are, the bottom line is people are overhyping the hell out of these moves the Brooklyn Nets made. Right, Rob? Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And I feel like, you know, what you said, it resonated in me in such a way that I feel like I may have told you this before we started recording and you just regurgitated it from your own perspective. And that's fine, because I feel like when we spoke before the pod started, I said, hey, I don't know if I like Aldridge taking minutes from Nick Claxton. And then you're like, who's Nick Claxton?
Well, we talked about Claxton. We talked about Claxton on the pod last week because he popped in a couple games. And again, I'm in a fantasy league with my son and I'm looking at box scores every night. We're in contention. We're in third place. One night last week, I see this guy Brown from Oklahoma City put up like 19 points and 17 rebounds. I'm like, who the hell is that? It's this kid from UCLA, Moses Brown. So then he did it again and we grabbed him. And I saw Claxton had a monster game recently. And I know who he is. I will be honest. I was taken aback by his picture, his NBA profile pic. If you click on his, his game log and look at him, it's a jarring photo. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not gonna get anybody angry at me for taking a shot at a young kid, Nick Claxton. But he's a nice guy, Rob G. I hope I wasn't trying to steal your thunder on Nick Claxton.
No, it's okay. You wouldn't be the first talent I work with to use my take on the air. But no, but you know, with the Aldridge thing, you hit the nail right on the head. I don't understand the reason behind getting Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge. Because they, at this point in their career, they do the exact same thing. They're stretch bigs, you know, stretch four, stretch five, whatever you want to call it. The problem with that is Jeff Green's already on the roster, and he's more consistent, at least this season, than both of those guys. So you have three guys who all do the same thing. What you don't have still is a defensive-minded big man who can switch out on the screens in the playoffs. The only guy on that roster who can do it is the aforementioned Nick Claxton. Yeah. And I understand him being 21, so maybe they want to play him in the postseason.
22 but, next month.
What you know, whatever. But
he had 16-9 against Portland, and then the night before that, he had 16 against Washington. Basically, he's dunking everything or laying everything in and hitting it like 63% of his shots, which is, listen, that's all you ask for. That's all you need when you've got three Hall of Famers in the starting lineup.
Exactly. And you know, with the Nets, their big three, and I guess, you know, plus Joe Harris, because you can't leave him open. They're so potent, it doesn't really matter some nights who that fifth guy is. The problem, though, is not every game is going to be 135 to 127, 128 to 117. There are going to be games where you're barely cracking 100 in the postseason. It's, you know, 105, 103. And in those situations, especially when you go in the Eastern Conference, you're going through Joel Embiid, who you're going to have to go through him to get to the finals. And if you get to the finals, you are most likely going to have to face Anthony Davis, assuming the Lakers are healthy. You need a defensive-minded big man to go against these guys. You can't have your only pitch be a fastball. You can't be all gas, no breaks. That was the same problem that the 7 seconds or less Steve Nash Suns had and the Mike D'Antoni Houston Rockets. They had one style of play, and that was it. You know, we're either going to beat you like this or we're not going to win at all. And the problem that the Nets have, and I'm not saying that I don't think they're going to be a very good team or they're not going to make it to the finals, because I do think that, but you can't win that way every single time. You can't always impose your will on the other team. You know, there's going to be times where it's going to be grinded out and you're going to have to get stops. There's going to be nights where, you know, for whatever reason, the three ball's not falling. You might have a Houston Rockets-esque 27 straight misses. And you're going to need to rely on stopping guys at the rim. You know, in a pick and roll situation, you're going to need your big man to hedge out or at least contain the pick and roll. And DeAndre Jordan's not doing that. Jeff Green's not doing that. Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, they're not doing that. So what exactly is your counter to that? And it seems like their counter is, we're just going to outscore you. We don't care about the other end of the floor. So that's why I'm surprised by that.
They're punting on defense, which I think is an interesting theory. I will just say the offense has been so good this year that this could be the season the defense just does not matter. It doesn't. We're seeing it, listen, not to compare the NBA to the NCAA tournament, but in the NCAA tournament, we're seeing defense does not really matter. It just doesn't. None of the elite, basically of the eight teams left, and we'll get to it later, better offensive efficient teams are alive than there are defensive efficient teams of the final eight. And it's just, I guess it's a sign of the times. Like, defense doesn't really matter because kids are playing so much basketball. So many kids can create. It's an offensive sport right now. Basketball is becoming that. It's the three-point revolution, if you will, has been so dominant that offenses are just too good right now. Now, of course, I say that, you know, Loyola was a clunker over the weekend, and we'll get to college basketball in a minute. But I guess just to wrap up on the NBA, Rob, I largely thought that, you know, the Lakers are going to be in trouble. I think everybody would agree with that until LeBron and AD come back. Everybody likes the Nuggets. Aaron Gordon made his debut. They got the victory. The Houston, Phoenix Suns are still surging. Utah Jazz are starting to get their groove back. And let me just close out with a quick note, okay? Do you remember Damon Jones, Rob?
Of course.
Former guard, Cleveland Cavs. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think he goes on TV now and whatever. So for whatever reason, he follows me on Twitter. So I saw, former player, he's on TV. I'll follow him back. And he put out some tweet Saturday night that Ty Lue is like, has to be the leader for Coach of the Year in the NBA. And listen, normally I don't have time. I don't care to engage in this nonsense with people. But Ty Lue or his friend or whoever put this out, but he like retweeted and put it on my radar. And I was like, hold up, Ty Lue of the Clippers, Coach of the Year? You mean Ty Lue of the Clippers who are currently behind Monty Williams' Phoenix Suns and Quinn Snyder's Utah Jazz? That Ty Lue with two of the best 10 players in the league, largely the same team that was favored to win the championship last year? They have one of the best records in the league. That Ty Lue? He's in the mix for Coach of the Year? I don't know, Rob. I got sucked in. I'm sorry. I shouldn't take the bait. And it wasn't directed at me. It was just like floating it or retweeting or whatever he did to make Ty Lue a thing. And I'm just here to say, Damon Jones followed up when I just totally shit on that entire idea. Like, bro, what are you talking about? He's like, you have something against Ty Lue. When he was hired, you took shots at him. And I was like, okay. So I then, and I shouldn't do this, right? But I think it was like Saturday night. I was laying in bed right before I finished watching the games. And I'm like, okay. So I looked it up. Ty Lue, he's his fourth year coaching. First year, he took over for, what's the guy's name? David Blatt in Cleveland, Rob? Do you remember?
Yep, correct. Okay. David Blatt.
And he wins the title with LeBron. And then second year, they get swept by the Warriors in the finals. Greatest dynasty in NBA history. Sorry, Celtics. Sorry, Jordan's Bulls. And then the next year, they lose again. But Kyrie was gone and whatever. Okay. Then LeBron leaves. So he gets fired as soon as the next season starts. So Ty Lue then gets hired by the Clippers. How are we to judge Ty Lue as an NBA coach, Rob? I'm not going to say anything to checker your thoughts. I'm just going to ask, how are we supposed to judge Ty Lue as an NBA coach?
Well, he'd have to win in the playoffs for me to judge him as an NBA coach.
Well, he's already done that. He won a title with LeBron.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't
no,
know.
No, 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 I don't know. Tell me, come on.
Okay. He was not the reason why they won that championship.
Oh, really?
No.
You're not giving Ty Lue credit for winning a chip?
I'm going to give him credit for having one. You know, he has it. I'm not going to say he doesn't have it, but for him to get credit like he was the mastermind behind that team, that would be incorrect.
So
it took LeBron, Kyrie, nuclear game 6, I believe it was, where they each had 40-plus points, you know, for that
Draymond
to happen.
Draymond suspension, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's impossible to judge Ty Lue as a head coach given his time with LeBron, okay? Now, the next job he gets, and I'm not hating on him. This is genius. It worked great work if you can get it. The next job he gets is with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And Kawhi Leonard is widely viewed as one of the 5 best players in the basketball. Like, how are we supposed to judge that? Okay? I think a guy, this is the blueprint. Eric Spoelstra, right? Video coordinator. Didn't have the background that Ty Lue did playing in the league. And Spoelstra wins with LeBron and the Heatles, okay? So then it's like, okay, LeBron's gone. What do we got? And they were like, make the playoffs. I think they lost first round and didn't make the playoffs. And okay, what does Spoelstra have? He went to the finals last year. And I know people are going to say, oh, he's got Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. No, 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 no. What Spoelstra did last year was incredible. I know he didn't win the title, but give that man some props. That, to me, Rob, is... I'm impressed. Frank Vogel in Indiana with Paul George had those Pacers, Roy Hibbert, Paul George, David West, going toe-to-toe with LeBron. Now, they never took him down. Frank Vogel then goes to Orlando, where, I mean, shit, if you win in Orlando, you might as well be one of the greatest coaches of all time, okay? He don't win in Orlando, he's fired. He goes to the Lakers, he's got LeBron, wins. It's kind of tough to judge these coaches, is it not, Rob?
I mean, there's certain guys you can tell that they're good coaches, that regardless of who they have out there, that they're going to be successful. I think Eric Spoelstra is a great coach.
Oh, yeah, okay. Wait, wait, we just, okay. Someone else besides Spoelstra and anyone who's coached LeBron. How about that?
I think that Rick Carlisle. Let's go, Budenholzer.
Okay, Carlisle is good. He did win a title, what, with Dirk?
Yes.
Yeah, he is a good
coach. I think Budenholzer is a very good coach. I think Nick Nurse is a great coach.
Hold on, hold on. Budenholzer is a great regular season coach.
That's fine. You got to get there first. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who can't quite get there sometimes.
Doc Rivers.
No.
That was pretty quick.
No. Doc Rivers has benefited greatly from the rosters that he's had.
And we'll wrap up on this random tangent on coaches. Brad Stevens.
His is more of a gray area.
Oh, I can't believe you.
And here's the reason why.
Wow.
Three
Eastern Conference Finals in the last 4 years. One of them where his best player was Isaiah Thomas, who, by the way, is out the league and was a second round pick. I think the last guy taken in the second round.
No, okay. that is factually correct. But with him, and this is to steal this from Chris Broussard, there's guys who can drive a Honda very, very well, which with him, if he has C-level guys, D-level guys, he can maximize the heck out of them. He gets them to all buy in, wherever. You give him the keys to a Ferrari, which is the upper echelon guys. You give him a Kyrie Irving. You give him a now stars, legitimate, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and for whatever reason, he can't work with those guys. He doesn't get the most out of the stars. And that's something that he's actually the antithesis of Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson, you give him the stars, he knows how to work and mold the superstars and get the most out of them. You give him a bunch of bench warmers, he's going to be terrible. And Brad Stevens is the exact opposite of that.
Hmm. Okay. Fair enough. We won't go any further on coaches. All right, quickly. Rob, I just want to do something on the 49ers and this trade. Can we just do a quick NFL before we get to the Sweet 16 and stuff?
Let's do it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Friday afternoon, massive trade in the NFL. The Miami Dolphins pretty clearly saying, we are not going to get involved with this Deshaun Watson stuff. There's too much uncertainty. We're out. And they decide to trade the third pick in the draft, which was supposed to be going to Houston in exchange for Watson, in any scenario, because you don't give up a franchise quarterback without getting a bite at the apple. Okay? They trade 3 to San Francisco. And the 49ers now have the third pick. And they say, although I do believe it's been all anonymous, like a 49ers source said, they say they're keeping Jimmy G. And this, I had my radio show Saturday, and in case you guys missed it, and it was a great discussion, and I would suggest checking it out. But this idea that Jimmy G automatically has got to get traded is not necessarily true. And initially, I thought the same. Like, oh, you got to trade Jimmy G. Get something in return. And Rob, I started to crunch some of the recent top 10 picks at quarterback, okay? And what kind of happened with them, okay? Whether they started instantly or not, okay? Going back to 16. Jared Goff, number 1 overall pick, did not start as a rookie. Jeff Fisher was a coach. He ended up coming in. He was atrocious. I think his record was 0-7. Second year, gets McVay, kaboom. Okay? Mitchell Trubisky did not start the season in Chicago. He was the number, was he 2 or 3? Whatever he was, Rob. Trubisky didn't start. They had picked up Mike Glennon as a bridge quarterback, and then he was awful, and then Trubisky went in. Okay? Patrick Mahomes, well, I should save Mahomes for the end. Okay? Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. Remember, Tyrod Taylor was a starter. Hugh Jackson was a coach. Baker, let's wait. He was we traded up for him. What, Baker? Oh, no. Yeah, Baker was the number one pick. And they didn't trade up for him. Baker was the number one pick, and he did not start. Justin Herbert. We forget this last year. Top 10 pick. Wasn't the starter to start the season. That was Tyrod Taylor again. And then, you know, the doctors screwed him up, and Herbert gets in, and the rest is history. One more. Tua Tagovailoa. Not the starter last year. Now, he's a little bit of a gray area given the injury that he had and the surgery, but I don't know if he could have started. But the big one here, and it involves the 49ers, and this is why I think they may keep Jimmy G. Patrick Mahomes was drafted by the Chiefs. They traded up for him at 10. They had Alex Smith. They were a playoff team. Alex Smith gets them to the playoffs. They lose. Alex Smith, thank you. We're handing the keys to Patrick Mahomes. Boom. They take off. The 49ers went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, okay? Listen to this. The 49ers go to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They backslide to 6-10 because the entire team was injured. And now, you know, I know they lost their defensive coordinator. I think they lost four starters on defense. By the way, the Steelers lost, I think, six. We'll get to that later on this offseason. The 49ers could keep Jimmy G, start him, make a playoff run. I mean, they could get to the playoffs. I don't know if they could win the Super Bowl with him this year or get to the Super Bowl, but if they draft Justin Fields, one thing to remember, he's just turned 22. Now, he did start for two seasons at Ohio State, and at Georgia, he was the backup. He got in. He got some run, some burn. So he is kind of experienced. If they go Trey Lance, the kid from North Dakota State, he only started one season. He is 20 years old. He'll be 20 years old when he's drafted. There's no way Kyle Shanahan and his complex offense would draft Trey Lance, trade Jimmy G, and start a 21-year-old by the time the season starts quarterback. That's just not happening. It's not happening. Now, the wild, so that, I almost wonder. I think Justin Fields is a guy. But the idea, if you keep Jimmy G, Trey Lance studies for a year, there's a lot of value there. Young kid. The other option, and you know, I'm not going to dive too much into it now, is this Mac Jones idea. I personally think that's total craziness. You don't trade up to 3 for Mac Jones. He probably would have been there when the 49ers were picking 12th. So I just wanted to go over this. Initially, Jimmy G, he's done. But you look at recent history, and I know a lot of those teams stunk. But you don't need to rush the quarterback. Yes, the value of the rookie quarterback contract is massive if your quarterback's ready. Right? We saw Sam Darnold go in. He wasn't ready. He had no choice. Jets stunk. The coach was horrible. Like, everything just, it was a comedy of errors for the Jets. I feel bad for Sam Darnold. But I can see a scenario where they draft Justin Fields, trot out Jimmy G for 1 year, then they get rid of Jimmy G. They have a lot of cap room. Insert Justin Fields as a quarterback. You build up the team, and you can make a 2-3-year run the way the Chiefs just did. Rob G, am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. And I know that there is at least one very specific NFL media member that kind of pushed back on you on social media.
Oh, well, I might have missed it.
No, you did see it because you responded on Twitter.
Oh, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Yes,
I didn't know if you wanted to put his name out there.
But no, yeah. No, we're friendly. I should probably get him on here, yeah.
And so I was surprised that he pushed back because to me it seems so obvious what they're doing. Like, you don't trade up that level of capital to draft Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Like of the three guys who are going to be available at number 3, Fields, Lance, and Jones, Jones might be the most pro-ready because he's just the distributor of the football. But he also has the least upside of the three. So you don't move up like that unless you're swinging for the fences.
Yeah, let me just, the other name here is Chris Sims of NBC Sports.
Correct.
So this is crazy. I had no idea. Chris Sims is pushing Mac Jones, okay? Mac Jones, hey, he's the guy. He's the guy that Kyle Shanahan wants. You're like, what the hell is Chris? Is he just trying to say this to break through and become famous? Like, what's Chris Sims doing? This is what Chris Sims is doing. He was the quarterback of the Texas Longhorns. One of the wide receivers on that Texas team that Chris Sims was throwing to, his name was Kyle Shanahan, who is currently the coach of the 49ers. Apparently, they struck up some bromance, and they're buddies. They're super tight. How tight are they? There's a story in a credible outlet, I think the San Jose Mercury News, that Chris Sims and Kyle Shanahan got each other's initials tattooed on their body, on like their ankle or something. Now, I'm not going to pass judgment on that, whatevs. Chris Sims has another man's initials tattooed on his body. They've got to be tight. They're boys. Okay? I believe this Mac Jones stuff is total misdirection from a friend helping out his old teammate. And there was just, I don't know what I'll do. I'll be floored if Mac Jones is the pick at three. Now, we got a lot of time to go over this, but I'm interested in the draft. The 49ers basically saying no to Jimmy G. I mean, Rob, we'll do this probably later in the week after the NCAA tournament breaks up after the Elite Eight. But Jimmy G, if he were to hit the market, Denver, Carolina, if they say we're not waiting on Watson, and then, of course, the New England Patriots. So it's definitely a buyer's market for Jimmy G. But then you say, well, Jay, what about your guy Sam Darnold? Are the Jets going to end up trading him? And I know that people are going to say this, like, well, Jay, what if the Jets held on to Darnold to see what quarterbacks are open next year and then traded him? And I'm like, I don't think you want to start the season. You can't hold on to Sam Darnold. You've got a new regime. The GM's not tied to Darnold. He didn't draft him. You don't want a scenario where Zach Wilson's hurt, Darnold starts, and the Jets win a bunch of games and are suddenly dangerous. And then you've got like what do we do at quarterback? And you got to end up paying Sam Darnold. Like, no, you've got to get him out. So unfortunately for the Jets right now, not dealing Darnold yet has really dried up the market on him. I would guess Houston as a potential landing spot, but I don't see them trading for him with Deshaun Watson still on the roster, right? So, all right. Any final thoughts on that, on Jimmy Garoppolo, Rob G?
Well, I don't like him in Carolina. I think that it'd have to be Denver or the Patriots. That's number one. Number two, I was with everything that you said, that entire rant about this whole trade, other than Chris Sims is putting out a spin zone to get people to think that he's taking Mac Jones at number three, Kyle Shanahan, when it's pretty open secret that the draft doesn't start until number three. So I don't know who he's trying to drum up interest around when it's not like, oh, well, maybe so and so will fall to us. That's the confusing part.
Yeah, that's possibly fair. I guess the other thing would be how much do other teams like Mac Jones. Now, listen, he was throwing a 2 first-round picks. He had like 2 offensive linemen who were all Americans. He had the best running back in the country in Najee Harris, no disrespect to ETN at Clemson. But like, that was a loaded Alabama team in a COVID year where there were not a lot of games. Like, they were by far the best. Like, I mean, Mac Jones, remember, he couldn't beat out Jalen Hurts. He couldn't beat out Tua. Like, I don't know. At any rate, all right, let's quickly get to Sweet 16. I don't have any big takeaways. The games largely sucked. I mean, you know, you look at the scores, and it was like just beat down after beat down in the Sweet 16. The most depressing part for me is that the games were not even really competitive. Like, in the second half, you only had, I think I'm looking at 3 games here, 3 games in the second half were close in the Sweet 16. That's it. Creighton Gonzaga was nothing. Florida State was nothing. UCLA Bama was a really good game. USC Oregon never was close in the second half. And then on Saturday's games, it was like Oregon State Loyola was just awful. Every time I looked, and I didn't look too much, it was a crap game. Villanova Baylor was that was interesting in the second half. Arkansas Oral Roberts was really good. And then Syracuse Houston was terrible. So the games stink. And that, as we said, is the drawback when you have all these upsets. Now, I'm not going to go over a lot of them. I'm not going to rehash what happened Saturday and Sunday when we've got games Monday. So let's quickly get to tonight's games.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
First up, Oregon State, Houston. The number one thing I bet on this game instantly was the under. Under 129.5. It's going to be cratering. By the way, unders in the Sweet 16 started out 6-0. I stopped tracking them after that. There were only 8 games. So first half unders, sorry, were 6-0. And full game unders were 6-0 to start the Sweet 16. These are two of the slowest teams in the country. This game's going to probably be ugly. And Oregon State's been held under 66 times this year. Houston, I like, but it's tough for me to say, like, hey, this is a buy on Houston. With a low total and a spread of 7.5, Oregon State's only here because nobody can make threes against them. And I don't know if it's their defense or just missing threes. The problem is Houston, not a great three-point shooting team. I would take Houston, but I'm not going to bet them. I did bet the under 129.5. Now, the second game, Arkansas-Baylor, that should be fun. I'll say this. I'm not going to go all Todd Furman. He's a friend, so I'm not bashing him. He went after Musselman, the Arkansas coach, ahead of the game against Chris Beard and Texas Tech when Musselman won the game. And Furman got crushed. And listen, hey, when you put yourself out there, it happens. I like Baylor here. I like him a lot. When you get two similar teams, run and jump, super athleticism all over the court, I'm going to go with the team with the better at everything. They're better at defense, Baylor. Baylor's better at offense. Baylor's better at three-point shooting. I like Baylor's guards better. Arkansas's a young team. The best player on the court may be the kid Moody at Arkansas. He could be a top 10 pick, but he hasn't really played like one. He defers a lot, as some of these freshmen do, a.k.a. Scotty Barnes, who killed me this tournament. Florida State, oh my gosh. Ugh, it's brutal. Arkansas's too young. They have two freshman starters. Baylor's defense is filthy. And they showed they can play a half-court game against Villanova when they were trailing, and it was the in-game bet of the weekend. Villanova leading Baylor. Baylor getting points. I hope you loaded up. I like Baylor here favored by 7.5. I'll tell you this. Arkansas is prone to slow starts, as we've seen throughout the tournament and against Oral Roberts. So you kind of have to bet this pre-flop, because after that, they're going to be leading early. Like, they just, Arkansas is not good at starting. Now, they do make comebacks. So I think Baylor can cover the number here. I that's my bet. I got Baylor and I got the under. We'll save Tuesday night's games, which are amazing, for tomorrow's podcast. They are, by the way, USC Gonzaga. I'll just say this. Gonzaga favored by 9 is, I'm stunned. That is way too high. Have not looked at the KenPom number yet. I don't see a number as we record this on UCLA, Michigan. That should be a game. That's going to be a good game. I like the tournament. My last critique, Rob G, before we go. Traditionally, the Sweet 16 is played Thursday night and Friday night, 4 games. They overlap, so you have 2 TVs set up and you're watching both games. If one game sucks, you just watch the other game. This year, they changed it because they want all island games. Folks and CBS executives, if you're listening, it is an extremely tough sell to expect people to consume the first 4 days of the tournament. I do it all the time. I do it every year. And then ask your family and friends a second straight weekend where, oh, I'm just going to stay in and watch college basketball. That's tough, man. So I ended up on the beach Sunday watching games from my phone. And Saturday, you know, we're doing pickup basketball with my kids. And I'm hanging out with the fam. And it's just a tough sell. And 4 straight island games on Saturday, when you have these upsets, the island games sucked. They weren't super competitive. I mean, the first 2 games were awful. I'm sorry, the first game was awful. Oregon State, Loyola, just a bad game. Nobody could score. Villanova offensively challenged. Fortunately, Oral Roberts, Arkansas was really, really good. And then Syracuse, Houston, we said it just wasn't a good game. It's not easy on the eyes. Look at that. 3 games where somebody scored in the 50s. And you get all the commercial breaks and all the misses. Like, no. You got to go back to the double up And also at night when the kids are in bed, you know, and again, I know I'm in Los Angeles, Jason, you're being insufferable. I'm sorry. I'll go out on that note. I love the tournament. I like what they tweaked on the first weekend, pushing it to Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I really like that because that Monday felt like awesome and the week felt super short. So I'm going to wrap up on that. Rob G, any final thoughts? NCAA tournament. Did you even watch?
Of course I did. Come on. Okay, you know, I'm a big college basketball guy. No, actually, I was at a pool party celebrating my wife's birthday on Sunday, and we had the UCLA game going on in the background, which was nice. So it was a nice 80-some degrees in the Los Angeles watching the game. It was great.
Yeah, beautiful weather. By the way, celebrity sighting. So we order pizza to the beach, and I have to come off the beach to pick it up from the pizza guy. And I'm sitting there at the corner watching the game on my phone, and I look up, and I see Jared Goff biking by me. He bought a house kind of near us in the beach. And then I really recognize him because of his girlfriend, who's this Instagram model who, listen, you guys can look her up. I mean, you know, she's a model, whatever. But she's like in full-on makeup, and she stopped across the street, and she stops her bike, and everybody, there's crowds going to the beach, is just like, whoa. You know, she's very obvious looking, like, oh my gosh. And that was my celebrity sighting in LA over the weekend.
Yeah, can we just get out of here on this before you wrap it up? You know, America, Jason likes to say, oh, I'm not a rich guy. You know, I'm a regular
man. I'm not, trust
but,
me.
But, you know,
I'm
in not. The last 2 weeks now, he's mentioned a $10,000 bet that he made with a bunch of celebrities.
Listen, we got to stop talking about that because, anyways.
In a Calcutta league, he mentions, oh, I'm neighbors, you know, formerly with Danny Green and now Jared Goff. And what was the third one? I saw a comedy special with Bill Burr and David Spade. You know, David Spade was whatever. I wasn't too impressed. You know, there's people who save up to go see David Spade, and you're like, nah, he's whatever. I'm good.
Okay. I will dial it down. I'll just say, we are renters in LA, okay? We didn't buy some $5 million house, okay? That's just not the deal. However, thank everybody for listening. This got really long, but a lot of sports news. It's only going to get better, folks. Keep it locked. Talk to you tomorrow.